Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Mark My Words here on the Life Coach Radio Network. I'm Mark Schall, a certified life coach and business coach. In addition to my work with organizations as a leadership coach, I coach individuals in overcoming the blocks they experience on the path to creating the life that they want. So here at the radio show, I interview guests, take your calls, coach people, and discuss a wide range of topics related to personal growth and development and transformation. As always, we'll be taking your calls and comments tonight, so feel free to give us a call at 646-716-9397, and at various points throughout the show, we will take your calls, questions, and comments. So welcome to tonight's episode, which is about recovering from eating disorders. According to the National Institute of Mental Health, an eating disorder is an illness that causes serious disturbances to your everyday diet, such as eating extremely small amounts of food or severely overeating. These are urges that spiral out of control and are accompanied by severe distress or concern, usually about body weight or shape. Common eating disorders include anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and binge eating disorder. Eating disorders affect both men and women. And eating disorders are real, treatable medical illnesses. They have the highest mortality rate of any mental disorder. They frequently coexist with other illnesses such as depression, substance abuse, or anxiety disorders. Symptoms can become life-threatening if a person doesn't receive treatment. People with anorexia nervosa are 18 times more likely to die early compared with people of the general population. So tonight, I'm delighted to interview my guest, Susan Linewski. Susan is a certified coach whose expertise is in working with men and women who have recovered from eating disorders. Having recovered from an eating disorder herself, Susan is the oldest of five children. She was always perfect, always strived to be a people, and was too shy to have many of her own friends. She married at the age of 18 and has now been married 42 years. In 2000, her mom passed away from complications from obesity, which is when Susan's eating disorder kicked in. At the age of 48, she was diagnosed with anorexia nervosa and experienced a spiraling weight loss, a self-esteem loss, as well as a life of isolation and extreme exercise, leaving her weight plummeting well below three digits at only 5'7". A silent heart attack followed, accompanied by migraines and the near loss of her family and marriage. Now entering her fourth year of solid recovery, Susan helps others who've suffered from the same despair that she suffered from, having become a life coach at age 57, at the recommendation actually of her dietitian. And today she coaches men and women who have overcome their eating disorders and are ready to take the next step in moving forward in their lives. So welcome, Susan, to Mark My Words.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks a lot for inviting me on your radio show. How are you doing tonight?
Certainly.
Hello, can you hear me?
Great. I can hear you. Can you hear me? Okay. Great. So, it's great to have you on the show, and I really appreciated when you reached out to me on Facebook originally and inquired about being on. I think it's an important topic, and like you and I said during one of our conversations, there's a lot of people out there that don't realize the kind of help that's available for people after they've gone through recovery from eating disorder. So I think it's really important. So I'm glad that you're here to inform our listeners of the work that you do.
Thanks a lot. There's a lot of treatment out there, but once you're released or discharged from your treatment center, patients have no idea what they want to do next in life. So that's kind of where I come in.
Great. So tell us a little bit then about what the work is that you do as a coach. I understand you, it's not that you treat the eating disorder. You work with folks after they've been in treatment and they're ready to take the next steps. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure, good question. I usually do not work with clients that are still medically unstable. I will work with a client who is still in treatment as long as they are ready to take the next step. So what I do with my clients is work with them to bust through the limitations that they have placed upon themselves with the eating disorder to look inside themselves, to realize that they can do anything that they want to do. And generally, I will work with a client one or two times a week, either by phone or one-on-one, and we kind of brainstorm on passions and what they would like to do, and we try to make it happen.
Great. So you're really about taking people to the next level of lives, and that's important. And be a real challenge that like whatever part.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes, it was just breaking up just a little bit.
I apologize. So yeah, so
nope.
Just so our listeners know, we may be experiencing some technical difficulties because of some internet challenges as I travel internationally and do the show from out of the country. So hopefully we won't have too many of those, and we'll be good. So, and worst comes to worst, if the signal breaks up too badly and we need to reschedule the show for November 18th, we will. But I think we'll be okay. So if you can tell me, Susan, if I do break up at all, that would be really
sure.
helpful. Because if
I
I'm
sure
breaking
will.
Up for you, I'm probably breaking up for those that are listening as well. So,
okay.
So what I had said, Susan, was that I imagine that the portion, the part of someone's life that's been on hold while they were struggling still needs to be addressed once they're done with that immediate treatment. And that's where life coaching comes in. I imagine most treatment programs don't really handle that part of it. They handle the disorder, and then the person's ready to move on, and they're done. And then that's where you come in.
Absolutely. A client or a patient will go in for treatment, get medically stabilized, have a treatment team, usually a dietitian, a therapist, and a psychiatrist. And once they are medically stable, they will be discharged and with tools, with coping tools. But where I come in is when they are released or are discharged and wanting to know what is next, that's when they'll hire me as their coach, and we will do some action planning and some visioning and kind of like pick up where they left off when their eating disorder took over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. So let's back up a little bit in time from what you do now. And I gave a little bit of your history with your own eating disorder. I kind of gave a bird's eye view. But can you fill us in a little bit just about your history with your eating disorder?
Sure. Well, as I look back, I realize that I probably had some sort of disordered eating all my life. But it really took hold when, after years of feeling like I was not in control of a lot of things, such as decisions on what I wanted to do with my life or where I wanted to go to school or the friends I wanted, and then marrying so young, naturally back in the early 70s, it was, quote-unquote, husband's duty to provide for the household, so I felt like I lost a lot of that control.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I was able to control is what I put in my mouth, and I got some satisfaction for knowing that I could do that. I can control what I put in my mouth. And actually, Mark, when I first started with the eating disorder, before it really plummeted, I was actually kind of doing a binge eating disorder where I would overeat, and of course there was no control there either. And when my mother passed away from complications of obesity, it, I mean, I can just remember the day that that happened and my saying to myself, I will never allow myself to be like that ever again. And thus I started a 12-year journey down the spiral to hell. And it was the worst thing that I have ever lived through. Not only did I not have control, I was spinning totally out of control, giving the eating disorder all of the control.
Wow. So tell me a little bit about you. So you said that it was a spiral down to hell. Can you share with us a little bit about what that hell was like? How did you experience that?
For me, it was a lot of isolation. My husband works at a job, and his hours were very convenient for an eating disorder. He left the home at noon and would come home at 11:30. Our daughter is married and grown and lives away from home. So it was myself and the eating disorder all day. So at, say, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I would just shut the curtains, put an exercise video on, and maybe exercise for the next 5 hours and not eat anything. And just, my husband found me unconscious when he came home from work. My head was split open. I was incoherent. I would make up any excuse to be alone. I would go to exercise class with 102 fever. Okay, thinking that I had to do this. If I didn't do this, then I would gain weight, or I would be out of control. So it was just my life was just sucked dry.
Wow, and I imagine just tons of, you know, the physical pain and the emotional pain just sound enormous.
It was unbelievable. Looking back at it now with a healthy mind, I remember that I would not allow myself to eat, because if I did not feel the hunger pain in my stomach, then I hadn't done my job of being a good anorexic. Okay. And I came to love that feeling, that pain in the stomach. It was telling me that I was succeeding at what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And the whole time, I was in complete denial.
That's what I was going to ask you, too. It's like, I'm not sure how to ask this next question, because I'm not sure just how did what was going on for you occur for you? If it didn't occur for you as, oh, my God, I'm sick, I have an eating disorder, something's wrong, I need help. It obviously didn't occur for you that way. Yet you also knew that you were in tremendous pain. So what was the interpretation that you gave to yourself about what was going on with you?
The interpretation, it's a process. When I first started losing the weight, people really noticed, and the compliments started, and I fed off those compliments, and I would tell myself that the pain was worth it. The pain was worth it, because I was being paid attention to. I was being given special attention at the grocery store or at a restaurant, if we went to a restaurant, that I had never had before. I rationalized it that this is the price I pay for looking beautiful. Mm. In my eyes, that's what I was trying to achieve, being beautiful.
And even with all the immense amount of pain, that was interpreted by you as that's what people have to do to look beautiful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No pain, no gain. And
right.
And I was tired, but I fought the tiredness. I would walk over 10 miles a day.
Wow.
If I could. If I couldn't, I did it in the house, standing in place. It was just such an obsession.
Sure. And it's interesting because as you talk about it, Susan, it's like, you know, as I've talked to people who experience addictions, it's similar, the doing anything you can to be alone so that you can engage in the chosen behavior, whether it's binging, purging, or if it's somebody with a drug or alcohol addiction, drinking, drugging, and the increased isolation, a lot of parallels.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct, Mark. It is, and it was an addiction, and it is an addiction. And I would miss my father's birthday party. I would miss family gatherings with the excuse that I didn't feel good, and then go off to an exercise class. Kickboxing, I took kickboxing classes for 7 years. You know, anything to achieve the look that I wanted to achieve. But I was growing weaker and weaker, and I would just ignore it. I was in total denial, and just figured this is what, you know, this I'll just sleep, I'll take a pill, I'll go to sleep, and I'll be fine tomorrow. And the cycle started the next day over and over and over. And quite honestly, I made the mental choice to do it.
So when did it shift for you into a different realm out of the, well, hey, no pain, no gain, and this is the price I pay for beauty. When did it begin to shift for you into something else where maybe you began to realize that maybe there was something more going on here than healthy exercise?
Yeah, that took a long time to get to that point. My family was very concerned, and my husband and my daughter were so concerned. I went to treatment centers. I went to 3 different residential treatment centers, and I was, again, being the perfect daughter. I was being the perfect patient. I did everything that they told me to do, and as soon as I walked out of the treatment center, everything fell out of my ears, and I would start to relapse immediately. So I didn't really hit bottom for a long time. But what started my... Oh, my goodness. Well, my mother died in 2000, and my recovery took place in 2009. So, yeah, 9 years. Nine to 10 years before a shift started. But, you know, I mean, my husband gave me an ultimatum, either get better, seek treatment, or I can't take it anymore. I can't be with you. My daughter threatened that I couldn't see my grandson anymore, and I don't blame them. I can look back now and say, well, of course I can't see my grandson. So for me, I think
how did
the
we
shift
then to that?
I would just be in total denial, saying, I can do this like any addict. I can stop anytime I want. I can do this on my own. I don't need anybody's help. I can eat. All I have to do is sit down and eat. And, you know, of course, the eating disorder thoughts were telling me to say this, because this is what I thought that they wanted to hear, is I can change, I can do this, I can get better. Just give me one more chance, and I can get better. It's just, you know, it's the same as any addict.
Right.
But my family, God love them, and thank God for each and every one of them, never gave up on me and never bought that line of bull for 1 second.
Mm.
So the shift for me, I'm just going to back up a little bit and say that each time I went into a treatment center, I did it for somebody else. I did it for my husband. I did it for my daughter. Mm-hmm. I never said, I'm doing this for Susan. Of course, being that perfect person again, I wanted to people please and do it for other people.
Sure.
Well, you don't get better that way. You don't. So my psychiatrist kind of dropped a bomb on me saying that the only option left for me was a nursing home. They had no other option because they would take me, refeed me, get me medically stable, and boom, right back to the beginning again. So when something resonated with me when she said nursing home, I believe I was maybe 55, 56, and I'm thinking nursing homes are for old people, for very old people that can't take care of themselves. and I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror when I came home, and I said, you are old. You can't take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the shift started. It was a mind shift. It was, maybe there's something better than this. Maybe I can do something better. So I decided to do it one more. I give it one more chance, and I made all the arrangements. I called the insurance company. I picked a place far, far away so my husband couldn't come and visit because I needed to work on myself.
Mm.
And I was there. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just wondering too if, you know, I'm kind of linking this up to the issue of control. And you said, you know, something mm-hmm. resonated with you about nursing home. How likely mm-hmm. is it that it was like you have no control in a nursing home?
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That's what woke you up.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in my home with my husband at work, I had some semblance of a life of control. Mm-hmm. I could walk around without, you know, anybody telling me what to do or changing my depends or whatever. But that was a total loss of control.
Mm-hmm.
You
wow.
know, my life would, you know, for all practical purposes, be over.
Sure.
Absolutely,
sure.
Be over. So I did go down to a treatment center down south, and everything was, I mean, I loved it. It was a holistic center. Everything was really going good because I was doing it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And having lunch one day, and the insurance lady comes to get me, and when the insurance lady comes to get you, it's not a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
And the insurance company had decided, since I was starting to restore, that they would no longer pay for my residential treatment there. They would pay for a day program, but not the room and board.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you, this was my shift. They told me at the treatment center that they would charge nothing for the room and board so I could get better.
Wow.
And that was my shift right there. And I thought, if they believe in me that much to do that, then there must be something worth saving. And I've never looked back since.
Wow. That's amazing.
Thank you.
That's amazing, Susan. So how long were you there then after that?
I was there another almost a month.
Uh-huh.
I should have stayed 3 months, but I made such good progress and had such an excellent aftercare treatment team that I left about 3.5 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably was about $150, maybe $200 a night that they would charge. So, I mean, thank God for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's those little miracles, and you never know where they come from. And I was just happy and lucky enough to recognize it.
Sure.
as my turning point.
Back to this control idea, we often hear that eating disorders are about control,
mm-hmm.
And the way you articulated it before was that, you know, there were things that you couldn't control in your life, but you could always control what you put in your mouth or refuse to put in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So comment a little bit for me, Susan, on what were the things that you were trying to control that you didn't feel in control of? I know you hit upon a few of them. And if you could just dive a little deeper into that.
Sure. Good question. Wow. One of the things that I thought I had no control over was what I could do with my life.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
When in actuality, I could have done anything I wanted to do, but I had built it up into my head that because I was met with resistance or because I said yes when I wanted to say no, that I didn't have the control, that somebody mm-hmm. else had the control. With my husband, I mean, we've been married 42 years. It hasn't always been, you know, roses, but again, we were very young when we got married, and I had an idea of what marriage was, and, you know, in actuality, it was nowhere near the picture that we paint for ourselves. I wanted control of the money and the checkbook when I really didn't need to have that control. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Different things that I built up in my mind that if somebody said no or that's not really a good idea, instead of sitting down and talking about it, I just immediately said, well, you know, you're all against me. I have no control. So you know what? I'm not going to eat.
Mm.
And you can't stop me from doing that.
Right. Wow. So great. So I actually just want to put our conversation on hold for a little bit and just take a quick break to talk about the next three shows that are coming up here on the Life Coach Radio Network. And then we'll come back to conclude with Susan for the second half of the show. So be sure to join us tomorrow night at 8 p.m. for Frank Talk with David Frank Gomes, Planting the Seeds in the Garden of Your Life. So join him for his exciting biweekly show this week. Also on Tuesday at 7 p.m., Jumpstart Your New Year Now with Danielle Mercurio. Are you ready to start the next step in your life, whether it be in your career, your finances, or your relationships? It can be pretty scary. How will you know what to do next? And how can you tell if it was the right decision? So join New You City Chat host Danielle Mercurio along with guest success coach and career strategist Brandon Marino as they discuss the ways you can start to tackle your hopes, dreams, and fears right now. And then on Thursday at 12 noon, Walk Your Talk with Leanne, The Many Faces of Adoption. Leanne Parsons is a certified professional coach with a specialization in working with adoptees and their families. Leanne's heart is in helping adoptees and their families who are weary from trying to answer the who am I question all alone. She helps them figure out why their lives at times feel unraveled. She helps them discover the missing threads in the tapestry of their lives so that they can become free to weave it back together and create a brand new family legacy of love for generations to come. And then, of course, my next show, which will be on November 18th at 9 o'clock here on the Life Coach Radio Network. So again, we are back with Susan Linewski, who is a coach who specializes in people who've recovered from eating disorders. And so, Susan, you were sharing with us about your own history with your eating disorder and how it started and the fact that you were really trying to control aspects of your life that you felt you were out of control of and that the turning point for you in the hell that you were living was the threat of a nursing home hanging over your head. And when you heard that that was the only option at that point, you began your awakening. It sounds like you've really been through hell and back.
I have. But if I had to do it over again to get where I am right now, I would in an instant do it again.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I know that's hard for some people to understand, but going through that hell has brought me to a place of such joy and passion that the hell was worth it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it actually makes sense to me, and probably to lots of people, that you would say that. Because, you know, I've known plenty of people in my time who have had, you know, cancer, HIV-related illnesses, and various things that they've recovered from. And, you know, so many of them have said that they've gotten to a point in their lives where that illness has turned out to be the greatest gift in their life.
Yes.
So
yes.
It makes sense that you would experience it that way.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sure.
It gave me my life back. It gave me the chance to also pay it forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's important, the whole concept of paying it forward, which is also one of the basic tenets of 12-step recovery, right? It's about carrying the message to others who are suffering. From what I understand, Susan, you do quite a bit of that, and you do it quite beautifully. So paying it forward seems to be something that is a notion that you've taken to heart and really done in a powerful way.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you.
So let's talk about that, about how you're carrying that message forward. So you coach people who have gone through their own eating disorder drama and trauma and are ready to take their next steps. And being that you've been through it yourself, obviously you've got the direct experience to be able to relate to what they're going through in some very significant ways. So what are your criteria for someone to become a client of yours?
If someone wants to become a client, one of the first things I will ask the person is, are you ready to move forward beyond the eating disorder? Another criteria would be recovery, okay. A criteria would be a commitment to, you know, to try and obtain the goals that they want to set and work with me. But the most important criteria to become a client with me is because you want to better yourself and do something that you've always been passionate about.
Mm. Great. So how do you then work with eating disorder related issues? I mean, is it about eating plans and such, or is it other life that's going on? What does the work actually consist of?
Sure. Actually, I actually talk very little about eating plans or eating disorders or behaviors. What I concentrate on in my coaching and with my clients is the here and now. I only ask for some background as a foundation to get to know my clients. Other than that, I don't intrude on the other treatment teams, their specialties, such as a dietitian or a therapist, although I do work a lot with them. So when you're in recovery from an eating disorder, you have spent months, years, and years of stabilization, meal plans, doing this, doing that, what other people want you to do. The first thing I ask a client is, what do you want? How can we get your needs met? Mm-hmm. And we work from that moment forward.
Mm.
And I never ask them, have you eaten your breakfast? They know if they've eaten. If they're If they're well enough and stable enough to become a client, I don't need to ask any of those questions.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And then what do you do if, suppose, you're working with a client and they are slipping into behaviors, and either they tell you that, or maybe they don't tell you that, but you're noticing weight loss or weight gain?
Right, right. And actually, when I first became certified, I would literally coach anything that moved, only to get the practice. Yeah, I would coach my husband, I would coach my daughter, I would coach my father, my friends. And my very first paying client, she lovely, lovely woman, young lady, but I didn't have enough experience as a coach to notice that she was not ready for coaching, because she would ask me certain questions like, well, Susan, what did you do when this happened? Or, you know, how did you react? And it's not about me. It's about my client. And she became very, very medically unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And I would visit her in the hospital. And it became apparent to me that it was both uncomfortable for her and for me, because we weren't making any progress whatsoever. So she ended up going to an acute facility in Denver, which handled the sickest of the sick. And I made sure that she knew that when she was stable again, that I would welcome her with open arms back into coaching.
Mm.
But, you know, the most important thing was for her to get her medical attention. So,
sure.
So when I notice something, you know, I'll kind of say, well, what's been going on this week? Or what's been going on? I've noticed that you are a little edgy. You want to talk about it? Or, you know, what's been going on, and what can we do to, you know, what do you need from me? What do you need from me to make your day better, or what do you need from yourself? What can you do to make your day better or your week better? And
right.
And I will, you're right, I will confront them. Are you having a difficult time? And I'll try not to, you know, use a yes or no question, but, you know, what are the difficulties? What's been an obstacle for you this week that's
right.
been hard for you? Right. And
so it's really,
what
I'm gathering, that it's really just like, you know, any life coach would do in any situation where the client apparently starts dealing with something that is outside our area of focus and expertise and training, even as a coach. We refer them to a professional who
Absolutely.
Provides the right kind of service. And, you know, I think that's a point that's actually, as I think about it, well worth expanding upon a little bit, because I think, and this may be the case for our listeners, because it's certainly the case out there in the world, where people don't understand what life coaching is and what life coaching is not. And particularly in the therapy world, there are therapists that don't understand what we do feel quite uncomfortable or quite opposed to the work that life coaches do, believing that we're doing work we're not trained for. And I think this is a perfect example of the fact that we do not do work that we're not trained for. And here, you know, you are exemplifying so well how you recognize, aha, client is working, is dealing with something that's outside my realm right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let me assess the situation and see if there is anything that I am able to provide. And then upon realizing that you can't, then making the appropriate referral. Because we're not medical professionals. We're not psychiatrists and psychologists and therapists.
Absolutely.
You know, and there are certain things that come up that require those modalities, and other things that respond very well and require a coaching sort of intervention. So what I'm hearing is that in your particular practice, it's incredibly important to be making that distinction. I mean, it's incredibly important for all of us, but certainly in what you're doing, to make that distinction, because if you weren't able to make that, then you know, you would actually bring harm to somebody, because they wouldn't be getting what they really need.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely.
So it's just so great that you're that's you know that's the way you need to handle that.
Thank you. And it's so necessary because it can turn on a dime. Eating disorders are very tricky that way. They can. I've lost many friends who had been in recovery, and the eating disorder had done so much damage that it was irreversible. And a simple elective surgery. One of my friends died on the table. So I have to be very hyper vigilant on this.
Sure. Yeah. Wow. So, by the way, if anybody out there is interested in calling in and asking a question of Susan or me or just commenting, please feel free to do that. And the number to call is 646-716-9397. So Susan, I know you started coaching women, and you also coach men, though. And most people aren't really aware that there are many men with eating disorders. So can you comment a little bit on eating disorder and sex or gender?
Oh, sure. And that's a very good question, too, Mark. Thank you. A lot of people do not realize that 10 million women suffer from eating disorders, and at least 3 to 4 million men suffer from eating disorders. Actually, statistics are there are more men with eating disorders in our country than with prostate cancer. When I read those statistics, it blew my mind. You know, more than prostate cancer. And typically, men are a little bit more reluctant to ask for help or look for help because they believe, or they were led to believe, that it's a woman's, a lady's disorder. But
sure.
I've met some wonderful men during in my practice. My men clients are absolutely tremendous. They are so recovery orientated and so recovery based and focused. And there's only one or two residential facilities in the country that have a separate men's programming. Usually the ones that have both men, the institutions or the residential facilities, they will program the men and women together. And I had one client who had to make weight for wrestling, and people don't realize that they will do it any way they can to make that weight.
Sure.
Or they're off the team. So
right.
I just knew that it was just as important to offer my services and my help to men as it is to women.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I see no difference. You know, eating disorders, they do not discriminate.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I have clients that are in their 50s. I have clients that are in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
The eating disorder does not care who it claims.
Well, so tell me a little bit about the experimental outings that you do. Mm-hmm. That's something that you told me that you do in addition to your group coaching and your in-person and phone coaching. So what's an experimental outing?
Oh, they're kind of like field trips. And one of the things when I take on a client, we'll talk and I'll get to know them a little bit and what interests them, what their passions are, and say if someone is interested in art or painting, we'll go to an art gallery and look at some art. If someone is interested in animals, we'll go to where we can see some animals, to a shelter or to a I have a client that I'm going to be taking to an aquatherapy session for dogs. So,
wow.
Yes, you know, if you like to read, we'll maybe go to the library, we'll have lunch, go for coffee, just fun things. You want to get your nails done, we'll get our nails done. We'll go downtown. We'll, you know, anything to, because I really think a big, big part of life coaching is also doing some fun things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're really part of the joy that people are bringing back into their lives.
Yeah, you know, I love to see the sparkle come back. That's so important when the sparkle comes back to the eyes, when someone sees a dog and stoops down and pets the dog and the sparkle comes back in their eyes and the smile is genuine, and that's priceless.
Sure. And what about the families of people with the eating disorders? Do you work with families too?
You know, I do. I talk to parents and loved ones, and what I really try to emphasize with my clients who are parents and loved ones that have loved ones with eating disorders is that they need their needs met too.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I tell them when I do some public speaking, the first thing I'll say is, you know, throw away the eggshells. Don't walk on them anymore. You need attention too. You need to be taken care of. You need to be listened to. What do you need? And I found that once they accept the fact that it's okay to need something or to get their needs met, they turn into such a better support for their loved ones. It just trickles down.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, it's the trickle-down theory. If you take care of yourself, and, you know, and the sad truth is sometimes I have to say that, you know, there might be a chance that at this time, your loved one may not recover right now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go on living. You have to do things that you need to do. Okay? You have to make your choices.
Yeah, so I imagine that it's really the same principles that it's recommended for caregivers who are a caregiver for somebody who is ill. You know, for example, somebody who's caring for a loved one with dementia, you know, Alzheimer's and things like that, or somebody who's caring for someone who's sick, you know, in any other way, that they've got to take care of themselves because, you know, the caregivers...
Yeah.
Die often before the person they're giving care to because it's the stress that kills them.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely. And I know my husband will not mind me sharing this. When we were going through our hardest time, he got his own therapist because, I mean, he couldn't
sure.
go around punching holes in the wall or in me.
Right.
He needed to take care of himself in order to be able to support me. He needed to, and he also needed to know that if I did not recover, he needed to get on with his life and get his needs met.
Sure. You know, in fact, in his book, The Accidental Caregiver, Caregiving Without Regret, Michael Bloom, who is a coach who specializes in coaching caregivers, talks about the very same concept about how, you know, you've got your needs and you've got to have them taken care of. You've got to take that time to care for yourself.
Absolutely.
You know, otherwise the path to regret is just like, you know, paved right for you and it's where you're going to end up. And I'll actually be interviewing Michael on my show in a couple of weeks. So you can keep an eye on my website for that. But yeah, you know, it's just so important. And even in her book, Take Time for Your Life, it talks about the concept of extreme self-care. And not even in the concept of caring for someone who's ill or suffering from something, but just, you know, just in everyday life. You know, you're a mom and you got a million things going on and three kids and a husband and all these people to take care of. and mm-hmm. your needs come last, and you end up feeling really resentful and victimized by the end of it, right? So
Absolutely.
It sounds like it's all those same principles that the family members of the person who's suffering from the eating disorder needs to follow.
It is, Mark, because I used to ask my husband this question all the time. How do I look? Does this make me look fat? And he would say, no matter what I would say to you, Susan, it's the wrong answer. And one day I asked him, and he decided to throw the eggshells away. He wasn't going to walk on those eggshells anymore. And I said, how does this make me look? And he said, I'm not going there ever again. And he turned, and I looked at him, and I've never asked, you know, I'm like, okay. And that's what he needed to do. He needed mm-hmm. to do that. And then, you know, just to back up a little bit with my clients, I really emphasize self-care for them too, because, you know, what are you doing for yourself?
Yeah.
You know, self-care is so important when you're recovering from an eating disorder, because you're so used to doing other people's biddings or taking care of other people. You really, really have to make time, even if it's just an hour a day.
Sure.
To soak in a tub or whatever, as
sure.
long as you can give yourself some self-care every single day. And that's another criteria that another layer of my coaching is self-care.
Mm.
You
absolutely.
Know, go get your hair done. You know, go fishing. Go whatever you need to do. Do it. All for you.
Great. And I understand also, Susan, and we're going to be wrapping in just a couple of minutes, but there's a couple mm-hmm. more questions I want to squeeze in before
sure.
we're out of time. But I understand that you give back in another very powerful way, and that's through some pro bono work that you do, as you know, and that's your way of giving back. Can you comment about that?
Sure. And that is my way of giving back. I hold open 3 pro bono spots. And when one is done, of course, there's always 3 spots. And it's 8 weeks of coaching with the same benefits of a paying customer for 8 weeks. And I feel it's my way of giving back. I'll go and I'll talk to groups. I'll talk to, you know, parents and support givers and recovery-based focus groups, and I'll do that for no charge every so often. But that is my way of paying it forward, because without that, some people, you know, there are some people that just simply cannot afford. Treatment is so expensive.
Sure.
And, you know, and, yeah.
Well,
so
you
do,
received stuff pro bono that was saving for you, right? So it's kind of like
it's in
the till for you to draw from, right?
Absolutely. And I would hope that person will pay it forward also.
Sure. So if you could kind of share with us, share with us briefly, like, one of your major client success stories.
Oh, I have one in mind right now.
Cool.
I coached a young lawyer for a year and a half, and his dream was to become a law professor, and he had recovering from his eating disorder, but he had other issues too that included anxiety, fear of flying. And not only did I get him on a plane for interviews, he is now on a founding faculty of a brand new university law school in another part of our country right now. So, and he's also considering taking flying lessons. So I consider that one of my, this client was so afraid to even step on an airplane, and now he's considering taking flying lessons. So, yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing, and he's a very amazing man.
Yeah, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
With you. So Susan, if people would like to contact you, how can they do so? And I understand you have a special offer for anybody listening to the show tonight.
Sure. I sure do. If you would go to my website, www.wingsof.com, on the front page, there's a little message. And if you go to my contact page and put your information in and let me know that you listened tonight, I'm offering 15% off of any of my packages. And that will be available for an extended time. So if you weren't able to listen live and you want to listen to the recording, it will be there.
Great. Well, thank you for doing that for everybody.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
So, Susan, what's life like for you now?
Life for me now is an adventure. There's no restrictions for me anymore. I can do it. I get up in the morning, and sure, I have crummy days, just like a lot of people have crummy days. But when I think about what I do for a living, what I do with my life, mm-hmm. it always brings a smile. My husband and I are closer than we've ever been. My family and I are closer. My daughter and I... we've never been closer. I truly enjoy life. I remember, I could tell you the moment I was recovered is when I had my first belly laugh in over 12 years, and it was a genuine belly laugh.
Wow.
And for people listening, they realize what that means. When you can just spontaneously laugh at something and enjoy it. I mean, there's nothing like that. People take that for granted so much. And yeah, my life is wonderful now. It's going exactly the way I want it to go.
Oh, that's so great. That's so great to
Thank
hear.
You.
And
Thank
to have
you.
That opportunity to create that
opportunity
in life.
Yeah, that's my passion. You know, When I was in recovery, I thought I would run away as far away as I could from eating disorders. Mm-hmm. And when my dietitian said, you should be a life coach, she planted that seed. And, you know, I'm so glad she planted that seed because it mm-hmm. is. It's my passion. And I never imagined I could be this happy.
Mm. Wow. Well, good for you. Susan,
thank you.
You do such amazing work, and it's such important work, and I'm sure it is so appreciated by everybody whose life you touch with
thank
the work
you.
That you do. And so thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story. I appreciate it, and it was a blast.
Great. Well, I'm really glad to hear that, and thanks for sharing it. Thanks for being so vulnerable with us, you know. And it's so great. And I'm sure that that's a quality that really serves you and your clients really, really well. The quality of being vulnerable and being open and sharing. And it's just, you know, hats off to you. I'm bowing to you. You can't see me, but I'm bowing to you.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you.
It's just great, great. Great work that you're doing. So,
thank you.
So very good. I will also have Susan's contact information posted on my website as well, and that so that if you need it, and if you need it sooner than it gets posted, feel free to just go to my website, send me an email, and I'll get back to you. And again, Susan, your website is
www.wingsof.com.
Great, great. And then mine, of course, is www.markschall.com. And Mark Schall is spelled MarkSchall. So www.markschall.com. So you'll be able to reach Susan one way or another through either Susan directly or through me. So So again, Susan, thank you very, 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 very much for your time tonight and for sharing yourself with us.
Well, you're welcome.
Great.
And thank you. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. A pleasure and an honor to have you on the show. And before I wrap it up for tonight, I'd like to invite all of our listeners to feel free to mark your words if you'd like. What do I mean by that? Well, if you've got feedback for us that you'd like to communicate to the Life Coach Radio Network, you can visit us at www.blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and then click on the follow button and send us a message. For feedback directly to me or to suggest a show topic, go to markshall.com and fill out the contact form. So I hope you enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating. I look forward to speaking with you all again on November 18th. So good night, and thank you for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.